this morning, which is United States against Sims. Mr. Alvarado.
Good morning, Your Honors. Rob Alvarado. I'm an assistant federal defender from Peoria. I represent Rico Sims. Your Honors, it's not the usual course of events that in a search warrant challenge, the defense is able to find out who a confidential informant is. But we were able to do that in this case. We were able to do it before the hearing. So we were able to present the facts of what occurred before the informant appeared before the judge and signed a John Doe affidavit. And what we learned was very interesting. The informant was arrested in a traffic stop about 3 hours before the search warrant was obtained. She fought with the arresting officers. She tried to destroy the evidence. She had about a half a pound of marijuana.
She was an all-around bad lady.
I'm sorry.
She was an all-around bad lady, no question.
All-around bad lady, but even more bad about this situation, when she was asked where she got the ecstasy, there was about 80 ecstasy pills and half a pound of marijuana. She said she got the ecstasy about a day or two before from somebody in Chicago, a friend of hers, but she wouldn't identify him, flat out refused to identify him. But when asked where she got the marijuana, she said, well, I got that from Rico Sims. And that was the basis for the warrant. Your Honors, I don't know of any reasonably trained officer or prosecutor who would ever let a cooperating witness like this dictate what information they would tell.
Well, you just ran into one.
I'm
right
sorry.
There, in the case you've got. Why is there a specific conduct? Why did their conduct have to conform with what you think is appropriate?
I think when a newly arrested person like this is used as an informant, they have no reliability. So there's no basis to judge whether that information is credible or not.
You have never seen a confessed perjurer testify and be held as having given perfectly adequate evidence for purposes of conviction?
Absolutely. Yeah. But when that person testifies, their testimony is corroborated by other
not
evidence.
Not necessarily at all.
In the usual, well, that is possible, Your Honor. But in this particular case, the facts that were presented in the affidavit were not corroborated so that you could discount the reliability of this particular informant.
But the issuing judge got a chance to see that informant in person and make whatever and ask questions of that person and evaluate credibility in that face-to-face way.
Absolutely. But we know exactly what happened when that review took place. The officer called the on-call judge. The judge met the officer in a public parking lot, got in the back seat with the officer and the informant, didn't ask any questions about the background of the informant. The only thing he asked the informant was if she was taking the oath, if everything she said was true, and whether she was afraid of Mr. Sims. That was it. The officer didn't tell the judge anything about the circumstances of the informant's arrest, and it certainly wasn't the judge's responsibility to try to assume that there was something, some material fact, that might have cut against a probable cause
finding. The judge can draw certain inferences. He's got a narcotics officer there, drug officer, with someone in custody who says these things about Rico Sims and the presence of marijuana in his house.
And drives him to Mr. Sims' house?
Yes.
Points it out?
Yes.
Can't some inferences be drawn from that?
Sure, certainly. But the judge didn't know what really happened. If you look at the affidavit, it's a very familiar type of affidavit. Within 72 hours, saw cannabis at this location, identified Sims, pointed out the house. But the real facts were completely different from that. We have an informant who pick and chose what she was going to tell the officer. She had a large amount of marijuana.
I suspect that happens a lot, that that witnesses pick and choose what they're going to tell you when they're cooperating witnesses. I never really thought I was getting a full story from anybody who was giving me it. But that wasn't really the point of the thing. The point is what they said, was it believable and was it corroborated by some evidence? And that's what you got here.
Right. But we don't have details about what was found.
Seldom do.
And the courts routinely affirm those kinds of affidavits.
Yeah.
But they don't have the background of the informant like we have here. What we have is a question of whether the affidavit was sufficient.
Frequently they don't have the informant in front of them, don't get to talk to them at all. The only thing to do is take the word of the officer involved.
That's right.
That's
right.
As Jimmy Durante said, there were conditions what prevail. You know, I mean...
Absolutely.
Right.
But in those cases, we have corroboration, we have a statement of reliability. We have neither of those events here. And we have certainly enough facts to challenge whether the issuing judge had all the material facts at his disposal. So I think when you consider all of that, the review that the judge had at the time he signed the warrant was not adequate. It was certainly not adequate.
I'm not reading your papers to contend that the magistrate was just a rubber stamp.
No.
Is that what you're arguing?
No. No, but what I'm arguing is that under the 4 or 5 part standard to determine the sufficiency of the facts in an affidavit, one of those is whether the affiant was presented to the issuing judge. But there was no meaningful inquiry that made that any more reliable than simply the person standing before the judge and saying, yes, this is true. But here we know that there were so many important facts that judge didn't know about and that the officer never told him. He shouldn't be expected to have to ferret out those details. He's not an adjunct of the law enforcement team. So he could presume that when a trained officer brought these facts before him, that was essentially what had occurred. But that's not what occurred. Not at all. It was a situation where so many material facts were left out that any reasonably trained officer had to have thought that a judge would not have issued that search warrant if he had known all of those facts.
I'm not sure I can go with you on that. It seems to me, as the government has pointed out in its brief, many of the things that you think might have been exonerating for your client anyway, might have led a judge not to issue the warrant, might not have had that influence at all. I mean, she was speaking against her penal interest. I mean, she was his girlfriend, whether on and off again or not. Heaven knows how that would have cut. I mean, I think that there is a fair amount in this record that suggests that the officer didn't bother to say it because he just didn't think it was all that pertinent.
Oh, well, that's what he testified to.
Yeah.
In fact,
you know, and I don't know that the judge was required to disbelieve him on that.
Well, when asked about why he didn't think it was important that the informant refused to disclose her ecstasy source, he said that was a totally different situation. It had nothing to do with this event.
Well, it goes to what Judge Bauer's been saying. I'm not sure that that's wrong. If you would like to save some rebuttal time.
I would, Your Honors. Thank you.
Sure. Mr. Cox.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. Richard Cox on behalf of the United States. I'll just have a few brief remarks unless the Court has questions. But, Judge Wood, you may remember I was here in front of you just a few weeks ago arguing virtually a very similar type of case, a search warrant with a good faith finding. In that particular matter, I had a lot more concerns about the warrant itself than I do in this case, because in this case, essentially it seems to me that the evidence weighs in favor of the government on all 5 of the reliability factors. And in particular in this case, the fact that the informant was present with the issuing judge, swore to the accuracy of the facts, allowed the judge to observe that there's a real person here. There's a person who's subjecting herself to perjury by making these statements. She says these things happened. She certainly didn't go into as great a detail as could have been, and as your question to Mr. Alvarado indicated, in my view, the details that were left out only would have enhanced probable cause in this case. If I could have figured out a way to satisfy my desires to protect the informant in this case with the desire to get a search warrant, it certainly would have been beneficial to say on the same day that she's arrested with all of this marijuana and ecstasy, she says she got it from this person who sells it to her so she can sell it to other persons. And then she specifically describes what he looks like. She knows his nickname. She knows his hair, his eye color, his size, his height and weight.
His address?
Well, she didn't know his address, Your Honor. She knew the house. She knew the house, and she took it. Took the police officer there and specifically pointed it out. I think it is. And also, you know, unlike a lot of the cases, she identified, particularly like the Peck case, which Mr. Alvarado cited, it was the girlfriend, and she only described him as a black male in the affidavit. Here, she's the on-off-again girlfriend, and she describes him virtually to a T.
I think of Peck as the diaper case, actually.
Yes, it is, diaper case. And again, unlike Peck, we don't have any obvious animosity in this case. She had an off-and-on relationship with Mr. Sims, but there doesn't appear to be any animosity. So it just seems to me that this is a very strong case for the issuance to give credence to the issuance of the warrant that the state court judge did in this case. And we would ask you to affirm the decision. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Alvarado?
The case that Mr. Cox refers to from a month ago was my case, but I couldn't be here that day to argue it.
That's the P. That's why it went all bad.
Okay. All right, Your Honor. I listened to the oral argument. Your Honor, the Peck case really is the touchstone here. In Peck, the informant did appear in front of the issuing judge, just like here. In Peck, the affidavit was bare bones, like this, and it stated that there was some motive for the informant to lie. The difference in our case is that was left out, but we know that there was a motive to lie. We've got a large amount of marijuana showing that this was more than just someone who was a street-level purchaser of cannabis. This is someone who, if you believe the government, had some very close business and personal relationship with Rico Sims. You don't get any of that from the affidavit, though. So when you say that when the government says that the information was detailed, it certainly wasn't, because there was no mention of how much marijuana Rico Sims usually keeps, where he keeps it within the house, how much he sells it for, is he a street-level dealer or is he a mid-level dealer? None of that was there. We only learned that from learning the identity of the informant and presenting those facts at the hearing. So that's why this case is different. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Alvarado. Thank you, Mr. Cox. We will take the case under advisement, and the court will...